Hey, Mary and I thought it would be fun to re-release a few of our favorite episodes, sort of taking a trip down memory lane. So we've chosen a few of our most popular episodes, which we will be re-releasing over the next few weeks. Mary, what classic episode do we have today?
Well, Chris, today we're going to take a little journey in the time machine way back to season one, episode 16, to revisit. Are you ready?
Yeah.
My Boss Sucks, which is all about dealing with bad bosses. It's one of our most popular episodes and, quite frankly, one of my favorites. I mean, bad bosses are kind of an evergreen topic. Am I right?
You certainly are. And it's also a chance to plug your book, Managing Up.
You got that right. So without further ado, let's dive back into My Boss Sucks. Enjoy.
Hello and welcome to Cubicle Confidential. I'm Chris DeSantis, and let me introduce my co-host, starting with C's, the captivating, the clever, and at times cantankerous Mary Abajay.
Hey, I am cantankerous at times. Were you talking to my husband, Chris? Because that really nailed it. Hello, everybody. I'm Mary Abajay. It's great to be here. I would like to introduce my co-host. He's a speaker. He's an author. He's an international consultant. And he is Chris DeSantis. And he is here with us today.
Hi, Mary. How are you?
Well, I'm doing well, Chris. And you know, today's show has me all excited.
Yes, we're in your sweet spot.
We're in my sweet spot. And we're in like that spot where I just have passion about. And so for those of you who don't know what my sweet spot is, it's really talking about terrible bosses, bad bosses, difficult bosses, even good bosses sometimes. It's really how to navigate bosses. And today, Chris, I brought you two questions about dealing with difficult bosses. One of the questions is about how to deal with a boss who isn't very good at being a boss. And the other one is how to deal with a gaslighting boss, or how to deal with the after effects of a boss that gaslights. So we're going to hit this from a couple of different spots. But before we do, I want to ask you, have you ever either worked for a difficult boss, or have you ever had to tell a colleague that they weren't a very good boss?
Well, yeah, let's start with the difficult boss. This person wasn't a boss per se, but she was in charge of a group of trainers, and I was a contract trainer, and she was a horrible person. Let me emphasize, horrible.
Horrible.
Horrible. And this was years ago, starting on my own. It was a big accounting firm. I did work within the whole firm. One of the divisions of the firm comes to me directly and says, hey, we'd like to hire you, for us, and we'll pay you more and give you a better rate, and we'll give you more work. And I said, well, that's interesting, but I'm involved here. I will have to go back and tell, the people I'm working for, this horrible human. I sit down with her and I say, I've been approached by this other division. She accuses me of lying. She starts yelling at me, you're lying. And she said, what do you mean I'm lying? She says, you talk to them, you approach them and you ask them for more money. This rant went on for 30 minutes.
Wow.
I sat there quietly. I said, I suggest, look, it's not the case. And why don't you just call them and leave me out of this?
Yeah.
I was just shocked by her behavior. Then I learned later, because after she leaves the meeting, one of her employees comes in and sits down with me. And she goes on to tell me, she starts to cry. And she said, what's going on here? Well, this woman apparently does rants continually. And what she did was, she at one session during that day, she got on her desk and started yelling at people. I mean, this is crazy. It's crazy.
That's crazy. I have no tolerance for people with no impulse controls, and the screamers and the shouters. And I think, you know, as we go into this segment today, I want to be really clear with people that there is a difference between a difficult boss who might be a perfectly fine person, mm-hmm. but their style or manner of managing or supervising just isn't very good, or isn't very good for you. Like, it doesn't really align with you. And bosses can be kind of difficult. They can be medium difficult, they can be super difficult. But if you move down that spectrum, then there are bosses who I call them the truly terrible. And these are the toxic bosses. These are the bosses who are the screamers, who are the shouters, who are the gaslighters. And I think dealing with this type of boss is a whole different story than dealing with a boss who is difficult. And so today I have brought you one of each.
Well, that's great, because in her case, she's horrible. Toxic. I don't know if I mentioned it. Horrible.
I think if I remember correctly, you used the term horrible. And here's the thing. I do think, honestly, I think that toxic bosses, people that go over that to the dark side, I do think that they're horrible people, or they're damaged people, or they're not really fully psychologically there with us. Maybe they're lacking empathy. Maybe they're sociopaths. But I do think that there's a big difference between that difficult and that horrible. So,
Mary, before I forget, I'd like to ask you at the end of this, this idea of what happens when you stay too long. What is that syndrome where you become, you start
Stockholm syndrome?
Yes.
Is that
a possibility?
Oh, absolutely. And
let's talk about that after.
Oh, we'll talk about the end. Dude, you know I got like stats up the hoo-ha on that
one. I love
studying this. All right, so I picked this question that came to us because I thought it was a really interesting question. It's both about how to deal with the difficult boss, especially, or really how to tell someone that you know that they're not very good at being a boss, thus saving the people that are working for them. So are you ready?
Yes.
Hey, Cubicle, I've got a question I hope you can help me with. My longtime friend, let's call him Jason, just became the crew chief on a large-scale project. He's on site and in charge of 5 other people. He is very proud of being the crew chief. Well, congratulations to you. But I fear he views his role the wrong way. He thinks that because he's the boss now, that he doesn't have to do any of the actual labor. Wah, wah. He just sits on his phone, on Facebook, chumming it up with the clients and the management. His crew thinks he's a lazy brown noser. Now, I'm the director, so I'm not considered a crew member, but I work with the crew guys all the time. They know Jason and I are friends, and they tell me that they think, well, he sucks. Should I tell Jason what everyone is saying? Should I raise it to leadership? If so, how? And what if the crew guys have already made up their minds so that even if Jason changes, it will be too late? Signed, Conflicted on the Crew.
All right.
Take a deep breath on this one.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot going on here. So let me take first stab and then I'll let you bring it on home. First of all, I would say, whose problem is this? And secondly, who do you want to help? Okay. So let's start with this is the crew's problem first and foremost. It's their boss. You're a colleague, not a parent. So next up, who do you want to help? Do you want to feed this crew or you want to teach them how to fish? There's a difference, right? So do you think Jason is the first full of himself asshole they'll ever meet along the way? Unlikely. I think not. So if you're going to really help them, talk to them and ask them what they can, meaning what they can, what you, meaning what they can do to change the situation, what they can do to change the situation, right?
In other words, teach them how to manage up.
Exactly.
All right,
ask them their thoughts and then give them suggestions relative to potential consequences. See, since you can be the surrogate for how Jason might take it, you're his friends. So, and you know that. So ask yourself this. If they don't stand up for themselves and you take care of them in this situation, whatever this is, what will that mean going forward? Because they're going to come to you again and again. And so in that sense, you create a dependent relationship and an additional headache. Now, the second part. Now on to Jason. Poor misunderstood Jason, right? Now, since this is his first...
You mean poor sucky Jason who sucks at being the boss?
Again, poor Jason in the sense that he has no experience with being elevated. This is his first time in this role. So he's a little full of himself, right? And so he's new to this. And I think when you are in the honeymoon phase, I've just been promoted. And this, you go over to Jason and give him feedback, I don't think he's going to hear it because he's feeling no pain. Jason has to feel some pain to listen. So here's my advice. When this is all over and you work with him again, pay attention to the behavior in a new setting. If you notice a pattern, then you take him aside and say, I think I am seeing you diluting your potential as a leader.
And you mean diluting or deluding?
Diluting, not diluting, because we don't want to.
He is delusional, though. But keep
going. But that's a possibility. But that doesn't set us on the track of correction. So you think about this ability. Look, I want them to like you as much as I like you, and ask them the time when we both, you know, sort of worked, and ask them. Remember when we worked for another asshole? Remember what that was like? Remember what we said about that? We don't want you to be that. So and tell them, you know, basically, that's when I would give him some pointed advice if, in fact, at that moment, he asked, what should I do?
I love it. Let me see if I can summarize. So first of all, conflicted on the crew needs to identify whose problem it really is. And it's not really his problem. It's the crew's problem. So instead of being the person that is going to solve the problem for them, because that will create a dependency and potentially triangulation, mm-hmm. you suggest that he coaches them, the crew, onto how to navigate this situation and hopefully improve it.
Yes.
Now, in other words, teach them how to fish how to manage up.
Manage up, much like a book by the title.
Much like a book I've heard of called
Manage Up,
How to Move Up, Win at Work, and Succeed by any Type of Boss, written by some woman named Mary Abajay. But your second optional strategy is to wait until you can actually observe Jason actually doing some... not leading well, like another situation.
A pattern. And then offer Let's look for a pattern, right? Okay,
and then offer Jason some, hey, observational feedback. Hey, I've observed that sort of thing. Is that right?
Yeah, you don't want to tell somebody they're snoring on the honeymoon. They're just not going to listen to it. You know what I'm saying? You're not going to get...
I know. Someone's snoring on my honeymoon. They're getting a sharp elbow right in the rib. And then a quick heel to the shin. All right. So I love that. I think those are absolutely really viable and very, but quite frankly, mature responses. So I am going to take a different tack, not a better tack, but a different tack.
Mm-hmm.
And I am going to talk about potentially conflicted being the hero here. Because while I agree with you that it does raise potential for him to be solving someone else's problem, I will say this. If conflicted is a director, and so he's not responsible for this crew, but he works with this crew. And if they're all working on a similar project, then my guess is this crew's well-being and happiness and efficiency and performance and engagement is probably important to him. So mm-hmm. I'm going to make a case for conflicted actually being able to go talk to Jason. And here's what I would say. And the reason I'm going to offer this is because I agree with you. I don't think Jason has any idea that he is bad at being a boss. But I think sometimes if you can hear it from someone that you trust, someone that you know has your best interest at heart, someone that's been through that leadership journey, I think there's a chance he can take it. A few years ago, I was doing a project with this national construction company, and we were talking about this topic. It didn't have anything to do necessarily with my engagement, but we were just chit-chatting, and we started talking about bosses who are really bad, the inexperienced ones, the screamers, the shouters, and the head guy told me the story. He said, a few years back, a whole bunch of people came to him to complain about another VP, someone who was like really horrible, screamer, mm-hmm. shouter, blah, blah, blah. And so let's call him Jim. Jim's like, you know what? This doesn't work for our company. So he went to his peer and said, hey, Chris, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but here's the experience your people are having with you. Here are the behaviors that you are doing, and here's the reaction in them. And this guy, so the guy, Chris, was like, oh my God, I had no idea that mm-hmm. I was leading so poorly. And so then Jim coached Chris how to like rectify it. So Chris went and said to everyone, you guys, I am really sorry. I have been kind of an ass, and I am going to fix my evil ways, and I'm going to need your help. So there is one success story that came out of that I know of. So I think you could go to them, but you're going to really want to go to them and then help them plan out how they're going to rectify if they're going to hear the feedback from you.
Well, I think what's interesting about your choice is that, and once again, I think this is a contextual difference. I'm seeing these people that are working in a different circumstance. You're talking about an executive. And if you look at the work of Marshall Goldsmith, where you try to correct behaviors, people that have a lot of skin in the game are more amenable to correcting behaviors because they know they're heavily reliant on others. And I'm not convinced Jason believes that these people are heavily, that he is heavily reliant on them for his success. I don't believe he believes that.
Well, we don't. But what I'm saying is I'm saying it is an option. I mean, to also let a friend of yours watch that friend fail in their first leadership, I don't think that's a very good friend. I think if there's something that you can do to help that person succeed, I think you can do it. Now, of course, all this stuff is very careful. You've got to be very artful about it. But I do think it's an option that I think needs to consider.
I agree. I think what and by the way, this is what we do, viewers. We provide you with alternatives. But when we only have a paragraph of information, we have to extrapolate from that some of our own suggestions.
Let me ask you this. Yes. If you were flailing at something and I was watching you flail, would you want me to tell you?
If I were flailing.
Yeah.
But okay. Yeah, sure. Why not? I know you and I'm flailing. So I recognize I'm flailing, right?
But what if you don't know you're flailing?
Would you want me to tell you? Well, I would be interested in that, and then I would weigh that against what I think is going on, and then I would determine what action I would, because we have a friendship. I'm secure within that.
So conflicted. Remember, conflicted and Jason have a friendship.
Yes, I think the possibility exists you could do that, but then again, at the same time, what do you know?
Well, you know what you've been told. You're bringing that person the information and you're letting them do with it what they will.
Yeah, I'm trying to be the Jason here. He seems to be coasting on the surface.
Yeah.
And he's coasting on the surface. And so I don't know if his awareness is deep enough to realize that this is going to be very helpful to you.
Well, you also don't know if the crew has the capability of learning how to manage up.
Yeah, well, that's the other. Yeah, that's a problem. But all right,
Listeners, I believe we've given you several options.
No, you're right.
We're afraid many of them may not work.
Yeah, that's
because the truth is you can't change other people. You can only control how you interact, how you act, how you navigate them. So you could either try to manage up or you could get some help from the outside. But either way, I think we've given them several things that they could at least consider.
There are consequences to his actions. And so we can tell him what those are because he's unaware of them.
Now, I actually know who Conflicted is because Conflicted gave us his real name. And I am going to reach out to him and find out what he did. If he did anything. Oh, you know, the other choice we discussed is you don't have to do anything. It's not your problem. True. You could figure it out. I mean, there Whose is problem? A choice. All right.
No, there's that. But again, there's empathy here somehow.
Yeah.
All right, that was great. Yeah. Good luck there, Conflicted.
I got to take a breath because that was a tough one. All right. You ready for the next one?
I am.
All
this
right.
is
now,
good.
The next one is about toxic bosses or the after effect of toxic bosses.
Mm.
And this one is it's about gaslighting and how to deal with something after you've already been gaslighted.
Mary, would you mind giving them 10 words on what a gaslighting is?
Gaslighters. All right. So gaslighting is a particularly nefarious form of a toxic boss. So a gaslighter oftentimes is a narcissist or a bully, but the gaslighting behavior in particular is the person that tries to distort reality. Mm-hmm. So this is the person that says, no, I never said that, or you didn't do that, or where were you? That didn't happen. Who actively actually makes you question your own sanity and question your own eyes and ears.
Okay, good.
So, and they, to make you think like, am I crazy? Maybe I'm imagining this. So gaslighters, not only can they be screamers, shouters, bullies, narcissists, but they actively lie and they actively undermine your sense of reality and your sense of truth.
Yeah, that's great.
That's how I would define it.
Oh, I love that. That's really, and it's from the movie Gaslight.
Well, a lot of people don't. Was it like 19? Who's it?
Ingrid Bergman.
She was so good.
Was it Maurice Chevalier? Was he the bad guy?
Yeah, I think. I can't remember. It was like the 30s or 40s. It's actually, by the way, people, film noir. If you ever have a chance to see it, it holds up today. It's really fantastic. All right. So let me get to this next question.
Sure.
And this is... Oh, you're going to love this one because this one's about me.
Well,
it mentions me. Dear Cubicle Confidential, I just read Mary's article in HBR. Mm. That would be Harvard Business Review for you all.
La-dee-da.
You know, right? I've actually written two articles for them.
Wow.
And by the way, it's a lot of work to write for HBR, but it's rewarding. All right. I mean, not financially, but you know what I mean.
Literally, HBR.
If you're listening, the first time I wrote an article for them, they literally made me rewrite it like 15 times. And I was just about ready to quit and be like, I'm outie here, people, where they're like, this is perfect. So it was a really interesting experience. Anyway, Dear Cubicle Confidential, I just read Mary's article in HBR about working with a gaslighting boss. And it rang so true for me. I recently just left one and I found this article reassuring as working for this person took a serious mental and physical toll on me. I don't have the luxury of not working. And so I've started to look for work after a few months of deep recovery. I was wondering if you had any advice on how I authentically explain why I would leave a job, which from the outside world looked like a great one, especially in the middle of a global pandemic. I really did try to make this work for 3 years and I don't give up on things or people easily. However, things got to a point where for the benefit of my physical and mental health, I couldn't stay. Recovering in Rhode Island. Moment of silence for recovering. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, this one, I felt
bad. Goes right to your heart, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's really sad. I just, it's a horrible situation. And hopefully you'll expand on this because of the, this notion that it stays with you. It just stays with you long after you leave the job. And then you start to doubt yourself. So, first off, congrats for extracting yourself from a very toxic environment. And secondly, I would suggest that article that Mary alluded to was well written. And I would suggest you get a hold of it. It's available to you. But per the
question.
Thank
you.
You're welcome. The question, during the interview, so what happens here? Well, first of all, it's fine to be honest about your previous job as long as you stay within some constraints, right? No job is entirely good or entirely bad. So saying that you had some differences about the work that was being done seems right to me. It seems like the right thing to say. Now, you don't go after your boss, but you rather say things about, for instance, you might say, well, my manager, the manager was absent. If the manager was absent, I would have, and they were not as always available. I prefer more structure. So one of the things I sought was more structure. Or let's say this wretched boss of yours, was a micromanager. You wouldn't say this wretched boss, but you might say, you know,
hag micromanaged me to death.
Exactly.
Right? That's a no.
Right. But you might say my boss tended towards, if this were a spectrum about going from, do what you want to, micromanaging, my boss leaned more towards micromanaging. And as I got really comfortable with the work, I preferred to do it on my own because this management slowed me down and the check-in slowed me down. So I would avoid saying anything poisonous about your boss, even though it would feel so good.
So good.
So good. It's so good. That's what you say to your friends. That's why you have friends. You vent, you put it out there, but you let it go in that space, not in this space, because it'll affect the impression they have of you, regardless of your being right. So in that sense, less is more. And what you've learned, by the way, the other thing too, on top of this is you're not concerned with escaping. You're concerned with finding a new opportunity. And I don't want them to think that you're here to get away. You're here because there's something that attracts you. And that's different. So also consider taking something you didn't like about work and how it was done, but how you learned as a consequence of that. So, for instance, I learned that my boss tended to let me figure it out, which I thought, you know what that ended up being? I ended up being a lot more adaptive, creative. I can improvise more as a consequence of that. So what you're doing is you're taking one of those traits and you're turning it into something that you learned and became a part of your repertoire.
A growth opportunity.
It is a growth. Exactly. So your interview should focus on what you enjoy about your work, what you hope to contribute in this new position, and what you're hoping and asking and what you can hope to answer on their behalf that makes them comfortable with who you are. So that's what I'd say. What do you think?
I love
Mary?
It. I think I'm pretty much in agreement. I'm going to add a couple of things, but I just want to summarize what you said, which is less is more.
Yeah.
Frame it in a way that, you know, your boss was more this way, your style was more that way. Here's what I learned from it. And then quickly move on to why you're excited about the opportunities with the new company and what you're trying and what you learned. I completely agree. I think, you know, I think less is so much more in this case, you know, when someone asks you about your gaslighting boss or your bad boss. Basically, you never want to badmouth your boss in an interview, your former boss. And I want to tell people why. And I'm telling you this not only from, this is what the research says, but this is from someone who hires people all the time. And that is, I don't know you from Adam. So if you sit down in the interview and you start bad mouthing what a B-I-T-C-H or what a horror show your former boss was, the first thing that comes to my mind is, oh my God, this is how you're going to talk about me when you leave my employ. So you never, ever, ever want to badmouth your boss during your former boss during an interview. And I'm going to add one more thing onto this. I also don't want you to badmouth your former boss, no matter if you work for the she devil, her or himself, to your new boss, even after you get the job, for at least 3 months. Because your boss still doesn't know you. So you've got to wait until that boss and you have a good rapport before you can start to unload what an awful nightmare your former boss was. I've had this happen before where I've hired people and they have told me like in week one how awful their other boss was. And believe me, I never built trust with them. I've also hired people who waited like 3 or 4 months when I knew what a great person they were. And then they told me about their former bad boss. I was all ears. Like, so it's really a matter of building trust before you throw your old boss under the bus. The other thing I want to say is I agree with everything Chris said about moving on to a new opportunity. But you know what? An expression I always like is, you know, it just wasn't a good fit. I'm much more interested in exploring.
Oh, I like that.
Right. It's just that it wasn't a good fit. You know, it was a great opportunity. Wasn't the right fit. I'm much more excited about doing XYZ, which hopefully the XYZ is what the interviewer is interviewing you for. So, and the other thing is if you interview with somebody that knows your former boss, like a competitor, and you know they're going to want the dirt on your former boss, I still say resist. Do not throw your old boss under the bus ever until you have good rapport with others. But I do want to say another thing to recovering, and that is, you know, recovery may take longer than you think. So we know from the research on toxic bosses or toxic work cultures that it can take up to 24 months to fully recover from a toxic situation. And, you know, Chris, they compare it to post-traumatic stress syndrome. Mm-hmm. They compare it to battered spouse syndrome and to Stockholm syndrome. So recovering as you're going out and you're looking for your next opportunity and you start getting back to the work world, still be kind to yourself because you may not feel 100% psychologically, physiologically, psychically, mentally, emotionally yourself for a little while yet.
Well, Mary, let's bring us on to what if you don't leave? Remember that Stockholm syndrome thing we alluded to? What happens to those people that continue to work for toxicity?
Yeah. So thanks, Chris, for giving me the space to talk about this because, you know, I'm very passionate about this. Toxic bosses will make you sick. Working in a toxic culture will make you sick. And you have to realize that nobody is coming to save you. HR ain't coming to save you. HR's job all too often is to protect the company. We see this every day with toxic bosses coming out of the, you know, toxic cultures. So you have to save yourself. So you really do want to get out. When you stay and you work in a toxic situation, you increase your likelihood of heart disease, cardiac problems, stroke, and even diabetes by something like 60%. It decimates your, immune system. It decimates your emotional force field. You are going to be much more prone to disease and illness and ailments and all kinds of stuff. And the other thing is I want you to realize is that you are bringing this toxicity home with you. You may not realize it, but the people who love you, the people that live with you, are not enjoying watching you be in pain. They're not enjoying watching you work yourself up work yourself down into a psychological K-hole. So you really do have to think about getting yourself out and saving yourself. I don't think any job is worth losing your mental or physical health. And yes, I know that we all need jobs. So I'm not saying you have to quit in a hail of like FUs. I am saying plan and exit and get out. You're going to have to figure out how to save yourself.
I think that's lovely. I will say one thing on the new job, you will notice a difference because hopefully you will notice a difference, meaning that a toxic boss is exceptionally bad.
Yeah.
A difficult boss is manageable.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in that sense, when you start to see the behaviors that they exhibit that you like, tell them. Say, I really appreciate you gave me a heads up on this. I really appreciate that you gave me a detailed information. Whatever they did on your behalf that you appreciate, tell them as they do it so that you are reminding them that that is something that you would like to see happen in the future. So start to shape them in your favor.
I love it. And you know, if you need more advice on how to manage up, get the book.
There's a book?
There's a book. Oh my God. There's a book. And you know, the other thing is if you want to email us, we will send you, I have a quiz about how to know whether your boss is difficult or whether your boss is truly toxic. So reach out to us and we can send you the information. And I promise you people, we will do another show on how to actually survive a toxic boss, what to do when you actually are living with one until you can get out. And I know we're going to have a lot more episodes on difficult bosses because Chris, they're everywhere.
Everywhere.
But Chris is not toxic. Chris is not difficult. Chris is amazing. So thank you, Chris, for co-hosting with me today.
Thank you, Mary.
I'd like to thank all of our listeners for joining us on this week's Cubicle Confidential, weekly advice for the working stiff. And of course, we have to thank the least difficult person in the world, our amazing executive producer, Mr. Jack Ettinger, for all his hard work. Thank you, Jack. So if you have a difficult boss, if you have a challenge, a workplace quagmire, and you need help, guess what? Chris DeSantis and I are here. Send us your questions to Cubicle Confidential. You can email us, info@cubicleconfidential. You can tweet us, @CubicleConfide1. You can find us on LinkedIn, Mary Abajay, Chris DeSantis, or guess what? Cubicle Confidential on LinkedIn. We're everywhere. We're easy to find. We're here to help you. So until next week, be good, work hard, be kind. Jack, cue the music.